This is Generation Justice, a multimedia movement that trains youth to harness the power of media for social change.
We welcome you to a special edition of Generation Justice. I'm your host, George Luna Pena.
And I, Kenya Alonso, your co-host for this evening. The past few weeks have been so difficult to understand and process. There has been so much violence by police and toward police.
We start off this program by offering our sincerest condolences to all of the families of each of the people who have lost their lives in the past 3 weeks at the hands of police, and equally to the families of the police officers who were killed in Dallas and just this morning in Baton Rouge.
Our radio program is dedicated to all Black lives that have been taken too soon at the hands of a state system that is unaccountable, and to the police officers who have also lost their lives to violence due to the same system.
In an attempt to try to bring deeper understanding in the wake of these violent acts, UNM's Director of American Literary Studies, Dr. Finney Coleman, will join us to discuss the context of the history of systemic racism in the U.S. and the importance of our present moment with the movement for Black Lives.
Throughout our show, we will also celebrate the hope, love, and light that young Black artists are bringing to the world from right here in Albuquerque.
Poets Xavier Thompson and Ebony Isis Booth will deliver powerful spoken word poems.
We're also joined by UNM's Black Student Alliance members Nicole Beatty, Jakia Fuller, and Anthony Williams to discuss Black lives and what it is like to be an African-American youth today in the 505 and the United States.
We hope this production will give rise to dialogue and action that will build toward respect, dignity, and accountability. What's Going On by Marvin Gaye, written decades ago, is still relevant today. Here's his legendary song to start our production.
I think we have to double down on our efforts to make sure that we educate our children about their history, about the threats that are out there. We also have to work, I think, to address the impact of white supremacy that it continues to have on our society. It is a cancer and has always been a cancer on American society. It's something that we have not extirpated. It's something that still needs to be addressed. Whether the pundits out there on whatever side of the aisle that you're on or not would like to imagine that it doesn't exist, it absolutely does. We live it on a day-to-day basis. So don't tell me that what I live is not true. I live truth every day. And I face white supremacy on a daily basis. And it is intellectually dishonest and insulting to be told that you're just imagining this or you're overreacting to this. I've been overreacting to this for four centuries now. I don't want to hear that. What I want to hear is, okay, I get it. What do we need to do? That's where we need to go. That's where we need to be, right? So there are those folk out there on the conservative side of things who would deny the very existence of white supremacy. And that's something that only white supremacy has the power to do, and that is to deny that it exists in the first place. It is a remarkable, remarkable act of power and will to say, I exist, but you won't be able to see me. You won't be able to encounter me. I'm alive and well. I will govern you, but you won't be able to tell me that I even exist. So we have to continue that struggle to educate people on both sides.
I think that's like true ignorance. Not even attempting to know what it's like in African Americans or any person of color's shoes. And I think that anger is a secondary emotion coming from that true deep sense of hurt that African Americans have experienced for years. And I think faith, at least for me, faith and hope is the thing that keeps me going, knowing that things have gotten better and hopefully will continue to keep getting better, but we gotta fight.
I'm optimistic. I think that Dallas rally shows us what's good about America too, that this nation is one of the few places on the planet where you can literally protest against the very people who are protecting you at the moment that you're protesting. That is a remarkable moment that I think gets lost perhaps in our discourse about these tragedies. Let's be clear. These are tragedies that people need to answer for this. Again and again, we see these cases where people are not held accountable. And I think that's across racial lines. I don't think that we can say this is just a black thing. Mm-hmm. It never has been. And if you look at the people who were at the rally that we were attending, if you look at the people who were at the rally in Dallas, if you look at the rallies all around the country, what's really remarkable about these rallies, as opposed to the rallies in the civil rights movement, is that those crowds look more like America than they've ever looked like mm-hmm. America. It sometimes takes these kinds of tragedies for us to do that. But I think we have to stand up as a nation independent of these tragedies. We have to find it within ourselves, within our communities, to come together and fight against any kind of oppression, whether that's racial, whether that's gender, whether it has to do with sexual orientation, any kind of oppression in any form. We need to stand up as a community against it. That's where our power lies. Mm-hmm. It doesn't lie in us as individual racial groups or as individuals doing anything. It matters when we as a people come together. And I think that's the beauty, again, of this nation. I'm not a jingoist. I'm very critical sometimes of our government. I'm very critical of our political leaders. But I also have served in the forces that guard this country. And I don't regret that. In fact, I'm very proud of that. Civil servants who serve on police forces across the country. I think there are a lot of people across this country who love it dearly and want to see it grow and become the thing that it's supposed to become. My argument has always been that white supremacy has denied America its true national heritage. The perpetuation of segregation, laws on the books that segregate and prevent women from voting, those have all been against the American dream. So what Black Lives Matter represents is America at its best. And that's going to be hard for some folk who imagine themselves to be true patriots to accept. But when you stand up to your government, when you stand up to this nation, that is the truest form of patriotism. When you say this is wrong and I'm willing to take a stand on it, that is what is truly American. Not oppressing people, shooting people, killing people, being strong in this American way. So I'm very optimistic that even as the nation becomes more patriotic, that we are reclaiming what patriotism means. That patriotism doesn't mean a bunch of old crusties in a room going, God bless America, or, you know, I'm glad, proud to be an American where at least I know I'm free, or some of the other rhetoric that's come out of our political campaigns in this political season. What I'm saying is we are on the cusp of reimagining America. Black Lives Matter is an important part of that.
I think you couldn't be more right that we need to come together before the tragedies. It's almost like when you go to a funeral and your family's like, oh, exactly. Let's go. Good to see you. I haven't seen you in so long. This shouldn't be the only time we meet. You know, exactly. We should come together before the tragedies and maybe even prevent things like that happening. How do you keep your balance and yourself hopeful?
The way that I remain hopeful is I teach. I spend my time with young people. I'm very blessed and fortunate to have a job where my job is to speak with young people, speak with people who are interested in learning about the world, and to try to share my knowledge of that and help them to their own understanding of the world. And hopefully the influence that I have on them is a positive influence and an influence that has them or leaves them more aware of what's going on in the world and also more prepared to engage in activism, patriotism, whatever ism that you'd like to put out there, that we can move forward positively to impact our community and our society. That gives me great hope. Also, a place where I find a great deal of hope is working with children. I coach Little League soccer, for example, and, you know, these little kids who are, you know, fourth and some fifth graders, they are just learning about the world. They don't hate. They aren't racist. They're not white supremacists. Those are things that they're going to be taught. The question is whether or not they'll learn. And I'm hopeful that this generation, that my own children are a part of, that generation will do better about being critical of the images and the historical messages that we pass down to them.
What's your vision? Like, what's the society you want your children to grow up in and my children to grow up in?
Well, the stock answer would be, I want my kids to be, you know, Dr. King's vision of America and But, you know, I think Dr. King's vision was a powerful and useful vision for that time. I want more. I want more than what Dr. King thought we could have. I want more than what Malcolm X thought we could have. I want more than what FDR thought we could have. I want us to have a nation of laws. I want us to have a nation that welcomes difference. I want us to be a nation that continues to move forward in science and technology. I want to see us invest in the future. I want to see us invest in science and in the arts. I want to make sure that our children have every opportunity that they can to gain an education. To every kid that wants an education and is willing to strive for that, I think should receive that. As a nation, I want us to lead in what it means to educate people. And not educate people about our ideology and what it means to be an American, no. But to educate them about the world and allow them and create a space where they can become their own selves, where they can become the people that they want to become. I think that's the power of America. I think that's the beauty and the future of America. I don't think that the visions that we've had in previous decades and previous administrations or previous generations is enough. We need more. We need a broader vision, even than the ones that we've typically brought up.
I want to thank you so much for being here today. I feel so uplifted and inspired by you. You're a role model. Appreciate everything you do for African-Americans. And just your way of thinking is the cream of crop, man. And I thank you so much for being here today.
Well, I appreciate you for saying that. Again, I'm humbled to have an opportunity to be here with you today.
This is Joshua Horton with Generation Justice.
Thank you, Dr. Coleman. Thank you for reminding us how important learning our history is. Also, I really appreciated your thoughts on reimagining our country. When the structures and systems that our society is built on are historically racist and violent, we certainly need to continue to reimagine them and build them anew. Generation Justice stands in solidarity with the movement for Black lives, and we are equally saddened by the recent attacks and murders of police officers. As complex human beings, it's possible to stand for both.
Dr. Coleman will also be teaching 2 Black Lives Matter courses this fall at UNM. And to hear Dr. Finney Coleman's full interview, you can visit our website, generationjustice.org.
Dr. Coleman chose the following song for y'all tonight. Here's Redemption Song by Bob Marley.
Old pirates, yes, they rabbi, sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I.
When we're faced with racist violence, it's important to accept and express what we're feeling.
Whatever you're feeling, know that your voice matters and that your voice can make a difference.
We sat down with spoken word poet Ebony Isis Booth to hear how she's using her poetry to get through her feelings of the events in our country.
Here is Joshua Horton with Ebony Isis Booth.
Hello, everybody. This is Joshua Caleb Horton. And I am here with the incredible spoken word artist and co-founder of Burke Noir, Miss Ebony Isis Booth.
Peace. Hello.
Welcome. Thank you. We are so blessed to have you in studio today.
Thank you. It's a blessing to be here.
Yes, ma'am. Would you share a little bit more about yourself?
Well, my name is Ebony Isis Booth. As you said, I am a spoken word poet, but also a program and communication coordinator. I work in nonprofits. I am the proud auntie of 2 amazing children, Alea and Corday, who are my niece and nephew, my stepson, Kalem, and, you know, my partner, Hakeem. So I'm real proud today to say that I am my own type of matriarch in my family unit. That's important, and that's a revolution for me right now, is loving my family and bringing events, quality events, to the community, like Burke and Noir, which is a networking and performance artist showcase for African-American artists in and around New Mexico. So
that's amazing. Is there a poem you'd like to share with us?
There is. So I wrote this poem. It seems like it was like Mike Brown and Tamir Rice and Trayvon Martin. And it was just, there was a long strain where young black men were dying, like young. And I think it was after the Dallas shooting, someone asked Philando Castile's mother what her opinions were about the Dallas shooting. And she was like, "My son has been dead for 48 hours. Do you think I care about anything other than the fact that my baby is gone right now?" So I have this poem that I wrote kind of in dedication to the mothers, the parents who have to mourn publicly in the face of these type of crises. And this is for them. "Hey, Lordy Mama, I heard you wasn't feeling good. They spreading dirty rumors all around the neighborhood. They say you're mean and evil and just don't have a clue. And that's the reason that he's gone and left you black and blue. Hey, gal, tell me what you gonna do. Too soon are too many done, drowned in blood and power, choked by batons and gunpowder. 10,000 ways to die, but this trend leaves black folks $10,000 shy of a respectable homegoing. Young corpses are costly. Cover the abrasions with cake foundation. Fashion neckties around severed spinal cords and bruised flesh, black and blue flesh. Boys in blue tear through black boy flesh. Black boys buried in Jordans we thought they might die for. Big Mama and them allow Al Sharpton's people to flip through family albums to choose a good pick. One where the blue, broken baby with the big eyes looks like a nice boy. Launch a GoFundMe. Or judge a bereaved mother for not having her first, middle, or youngest child's lives insured. Primp and primetime mama and daddy for the spotlight. Consider the authenticity of designer frames damning tears on Piers Morgan tonight. She last spoke with her son last night. Yesterday, everything was all right. But today, black mommies and daddies are interrogated in HD, hiding behind knockoff shades, protecting us from seeing their gamma strength pain. Because just yesterday, they only knew each other's names and now beg the world for clicks to collect enough money to pay a man to handle the baby's blue, broken, black body. The baby boy you gestated, now forsaken down here, dead on granite in summertime in the morgue, looking at a face that will offer no smirk or bare family resemblance. Next of kin, mother, father, they had the same smile, but you can't tell right now. Yesterday, they laughed deep and mouths spread wide open, chest full of air and ambition. But today, bellowed from the darkest place where the light goes to fade, chest full of lead and systematic oppression. Conversations in the kitchen are now hushed and heavy. Sounds of sorrow provide a soundtrack. News cameras that never come when black boys burn holes through their reflections as an exercise in belonging somewhere. Take up spots on the block to displace the D-boys. Rhonda's coming from the shop to smooth the frayed hair and soothe the frazzled nerves of Mama. See, she can't go on TV looking any old kind of way, so in ritual of black girl magic, they share herb and small white pills served in Advil caps with a sip of beer. Here, swallow this. Get ready to talk about how when you say he didn't deserve to die, you don't sound too maternal. Keep the weeping to a minimum. Tears read better on camera when they stream. What kind of child have you raised that he might find himself on the uncontested end of a barrel? Plastic gun tucked in his waistband like childhood contraband. What kind of child have you raised that he might find himself too big, too black, too alive, too much for this world before the men come to lay his body down for good this time? Tell us again how he was a good kid. Convince the world in this next 45 seconds segment that your pain is not dangerous. Tell us again where you were that day. But if you could somehow soften your face, perhaps then you wouldn't look so intimidating. The polls show that viewers are having a hard time sympathizing with you and your wailing kinfolk, crying over this, another dead body who no one has money to bury, because planning funerals for children who have not yet lived does not make your list of things to do, when the only thing you have consistently excelled at is keeping your baby alive. So one more nightly newscast before they give your now cold, blue, broken baby's body back. before they let you mourn your murdered offspring. Get yourself together enough to get together enough to take off those shades. Stand before the world in another clip, telling us how you've forgotten and forgiven the men who did this.
It's funny how powerful art can be.
Yeah. I mean, it saved my life. My poetry is angry and sad and honest because I have to use that to process. It's not about me. You know, I'm a vessel. You know, I don't think anybody's ego should be motivating their involvement or activism in this movement. I think that's what makes it pure, when you're using your artistic talent and your creative skill or prowess to tell the truth in a way that we are just not seeing. It's not being done, you know? When you remove the ego from it and tell the truth, every single time if you let yourself get that open, you will be replenished, because you will receive what you need to heal. It will come to you. But the only way you can get there is to actually bear it. And that's hard to ask people to do in a time where we're being slaughtered. It's a rough world out there. It's a hard hustle. But it's not the end. And we can get there. But we have to be brave enough to be vulnerable and go forward and do this work. And I have full faith that we'll be rewarded for that.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. You really blessed us today.
Thank
with
you.
Your insights and your words.
You blessed me.
And if somebody were to look at you and not want to be a part of you because of the color of your skin, they would miss out on an incredible light and the incredible power that you bring with your words.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I first heard Ebony speak at a rally for All in Sterling, and was moved by how she delivers her poems with so much emotion. She speaks about things that I would have never thought of. She helped me to want to learn more about other people's struggles and hopes. Thank you, Ebony.
Ebony, you're a spirit filled with truth and power, and I appreciate you sharing that with us. Thank you. To learn more about Ebony, you can listen to her full interview on generationjustice.org. And now, here's a song Ebony inspired us to play.
Here's How You Talk About by Janelle Monáe.
Next up, we sit with members of the Black Student Alliance at UNM.
Jakia Fuller, Nicole Beatty, and Anthony Williams are three Black students in Albuquerque taking action against racism and white supremacy in their communities.
Here again is Generation Justice's own Joshua Horton with Jakia, Nicole, and Anthony.
Hello, everyone. This is Joshua Caleb Horton with Generation Justice, and I'm joined today with three members of UNM's Black Student Alliance, Jakia Fuller, Nicole Beatty, and Anthony Williams Rivetta, to discuss Black lives and what it's like to be an African-American today in America. I'd like to welcome the three of you. Thank you so much for being with us here today. Would you share a little bit more about yourselves?
Hi, my name is Nicole Beatty. I am a graduating senior, actually summer 2016, with a degree in chemical engineering from the University of New Mexico. I've been a part of the Black Student Alliance for almost a year. I was the past co-president for the National Society of Black Engineers at the University of New Mexico.
Hi, I'm Jakia Fuller. I'm the co-president of the National Society of Black Engineers with Nicole Beatty. I've been part of the Black Student Alliance since fall 2015.
Hi, my name is Anthony Williams Rivera. I am a junior here at the University of New Mexico in electrical engineering. I'm also the 2016 co-president of the National Society of Black Engineers. I've been a part of the Black Student Alliance for almost a year now as well. I think the three of us were there for its founding. I'm excited to be here.
Could you tell us a little bit more about the Black Student Alliance?
The Black Student Alliance, BSA, is a composite of many different Black student organizations on campus, predominantly the National Society of Black Engineers, NSBE, PMES, which is the Powerful Movement of Educated Sisters, the BSU, Black Men in Motion, other affiliates from African-American sororities and fraternities.
when you open your phone and you see people like Alton Sterling and Philando Castile murdered by police, what's your initial reaction?
My biggest response was, I can't believe that you're actually able to see this on social media. That was like the biggest thing. It was actually live streamed from Facebook. It was just really shocking, just because at first you're just like, I can't believe what I'm seeing. This isn't really what's happening. But then you look at comments and then you see so many people who are actually defending what happened. They're just like, oh, you don't really know what actually happened. You weren't there. There could have been X, Y, and Z could have happened before they actually started recording the video. So you don't really know what happened. But at the end of the day, someone lost their life.
I actually chose not to watch the videos because I knew no matter what happened during the duration of the videos, the outcome wasn't going to change. And I didn't think it was for me to see someone's life taken. I think far too much in media that we're so readily to put black bodies on media and just be so reckless in how we're portrayed and the biases associated with it. So I made the decision not to view the videos. I also made the decision not to really read social media feeds. I know that in our day and age, the first thing we like to do is troll. I had to step back from that because at the end of the day, these people who are trolling are doing it from behind a screen where they can just stand up and walk away. Where it's for me, it's like I can read it and then I look to my brother and I look to my family members and I'm just like, we're African Americans, we're people of color and we're suffering. And these people who are just trolling and writing these negativity don't even know what microaggressions really feel like, what it feels like to walk into a classroom and you're the only black student, or to walk into a store and be racially profiled and have to like be weary of someone following the store or being pulled over by a cop and really having to know the procedure and protocol of what to do when you're approached by the cop.
Do you believe there's a certain amount of psychological trauma African Americans and people of color endure from these repetitive acts of racism and violence?
Yeah, I definitely think it has taken a psychological toll on our community. And that bothers me, that lives being taken on such a grotesque scale is the norm. What bothers me even more, though, is like these lives are being taken by these officers and there's no repercussions. Things that I'm battling with is like, okay, we're going to go through another cyclic thing. We're going to have lives lost due to police brutality, through aggressiveness, because of lack of education with our armed forces. We're going to protest. We're going to have these hashtags. And then we're going to pivot. And we're going to go through trials. And then we're going to have mistrials. And then we're going to have officers who are going to get paid administrative leave. And then we're going to have officers, the same ones who've killed these people that are smeared across media, back in the office, back at their job. There's no consequences. There's no checks and balances. And I think that's what's bothering the most. And I think that's a lot of what our community is suffering from, is like, there's no justice. How do you expect me to heal, be okay with seeing someone die so forcefully, so aggressively, and then there's no repercussions for it?
I believe everything about this situation is psychologically damaging. I believe how often we've seen this happen, how its existence is denied, and how nothing is done about it. I spoke with my father not too long ago, and he mentioned to me, this is the same thing that was happening when I was a young boy, which is, one of our brothers is killed, such as Martin or Fred Hampton. Hundreds of people rally behind them in the streets, walking behind a casket, and that's the end. And that's still happening today. And to the point that there is video of these murders caught, a person literally putting their arms up and laying down on the ground, and they still get killed.
You talked a little bit about the justice system. What do you think systemic racism, what role do you think it plays in our lives?
I would define systemic racism as something that's constantly being perpetuated in a system that wasn't necessarily made for African Americans or people of color, where there's procedures, policy, and protocol put in place to keep us oppressed.
So the Black Lives Matter movement, or the movement for Black Lives, is like our modern day civil rights movement. Why do you think when people say Black Lives Matter, people are offended? They diminish its meaning with, well, all lives matter. They contort and twist the movement and deem it as racist and violent.
People deem it as racist and violent is because that's like the image, that's the imagery that's portrayed by the media for like African Americans. Like in our country, like we're seen as like aggressive and violent. I feel like a lot of people just go to, all lives matter when they hear Black Lives Matter, because they're just like, oh, you know, because we're all people, we all should matter. And I'm like, that's fine and well. Like, everyone's been saying, you can go on anywhere on YouTube, like on Facebook, on any type of social media. And you have people who are just like, no, we understand that all lives matter. But in this moment in time, like, there's a higher increase of Black lives that are, like, that are being lost. And these lives matter. And I feel like people were just like, well, you know, it's like everyone matters. But I feel like that's like a deeper issue that they need to actually look within themselves and figure out why it is that they're so offended by it. Because a lot of people don't want to even acknowledge their racial prejudices that they actually have. Like, Black people are dying at a higher rate. That's what's going on.
I agree with Jakia and where people feel like it's an attack on them when you say Black Lives Matter, simply because it's a situation where you have to accept that something bad is happening to a race outside of your own, that either some members of your race are responsible for it, or there is simply just something happening that you are not in control of, and that you are also not exactly helping or defending. A lot of people feel attacked by this because they don't know what to do, they don't know how to take it, and they don't try to educate themselves or talk to people about it. They hear Black Lives Matter, and I've heard several people think, okay, well, it's another kind of revolution, it's another Black Panthers thing. They don't take a moment to look to their neighbor and say, so what is this about? What is this for? How do you feel about this? Why is this affecting you more than it's affecting me?
Like Anthony said, I think it all boils down to education. Look at our educational system. What's the first kind of history that you hear about when it comes to African Americans?
You hear about slavery.
You hear about slavery. You hear about slavery in 2 pages of your, what, 500-page book. You hear about these 3 to 4 head leaders in the African American community, Malcolm X. You hear about MLK, Martin Luther King. But that's it. Education is perpetuated whiteness. It's blanketed whiteness. I feel like people feel offended when you hear Black Lives Matter because there's a lack of education.
As young Black people, what kind of progress do you hope to see in the movement for Black Lives within the next 20 years?
What progress I want to see? I want people to be honest. Like, if you don't know what's really going on, like with racial climate and issues and stuff, be honest about it. And actually don't be afraid to reach out to someone and be like, hey, what's actually going on? Like, put your own perspective aside and see from someone else's like lens, like actually what they're going through on a day-to-day basis. Because so many people are just like, you know, encroached on their personal bubble, then they don't care. Like, I want people to actually start caring and be like, hey, I'm not the only person here. I'm not the only ethnicity here. Let's find out what's going on in this community, like, at large with people of color, with just everyone at large. Because everyone's just like, oh, that's that community. I don't care. It's none of my concern. Why don't we all actually start caring about what's going on in each other's community so that we all can be, like, aware of what's going on? Because we're all facing a lot of, like, similar issues and concerns, but none of us know because there's such a huge disconnect and lack of communication.
I want to see people take responsibility for some of their communities, because as you know, there are people out there who will say, well, I understand that my people are having trouble, they're Native American, or my people are having trouble, they're African American, but I don't feel like I'm having those troubles. I'm succeeding on my own, so that's fine. That's not my problem.
It really bothers me that I have to say this, but I don't know what our community is going to look like, what the African-American community is going to look like in 20 years. You know why? Because I'm just so blindsided, stuck. I'm still hurt, still angry, still furious in regards to what our current state is. It's hard to see past it. It's hard to see something beautiful when you're in the trenches. I can only hope for healing to occur amongst the African-American community in order for us to tackle, overcome, demolish this monster. I feel like it starts with us, and I feel like healing is the first place that needs to happen, because I feel like it's more than just like the police brutality. It's going on in our educational system. Why are our children being lost? It's going on in our prison system. Why are we incarcerated? It's going on with looking at mental health and why we're so affected. I just feel like there's a lot of healing that needs to happen.
Nicole, Jakia, Anthony, thank you so much for being here with us today and sharing your perspectives. For Generation Justice, this is Josh Horton.
I agree with Nicole that it's wrong that these murders have become the norm. I'm angry and disappointed that these are the norm. but I'm glad people like Jakia, Nicole, and Anthony are here and trying to change it. Thank you guys for taking the time to come in.
Nicole, when you talk about no repercussions, no consequences, when you talk about this monster, for me that really underscores the structural aspect of the issue that we're talking about. So thank you. Thank you to Jakia and Anthony as well for coming in and talking with us. To hear more of what Jakia, Nicole, and Anthony had to say, listen to the full interview on our website, generationjustice.org. It's important, especially in times like these, to listen to our youth.
We sat down with 15-year-old activist and artist Xavier Thompson, who inspired us with his words, his wisdom, and his insight.
Here's Joshua Horton with Xavier Thompson.
Hello, everybody. This is Joshua Horton with Generation Justice. I am blessed today to be with Xavier Z. Thompson. I'd like to welcome you today, Xavier.
Hey.
Would you share a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, my name is Xavier Thompson. I'm 15. I go to Highland High School. I'll be a sophomore next year. I write poetry. I write music. So I'm just really excited to be here. This is like surreal almost. So thanks for having me.
Of course, man. So it's a really interesting time right now to be young, black, and in America. How do you find hope? Do you feel like you get a good amount of support from community and from people?
Yeah, I feel like it takes a village, you know? The village is strong. Everybody is a part of the community. Everybody has a voice and everybody can do something. It doesn't matter like your color, or your pigment, or where you're from, or your language or anything. I mean, like every person, every soul is important, especially in these times, you know? Like what keeps me going is the fact that we have these people here, you know? And also the fact that I could be the next hashtag, you know, you could be the next hashtag. Just the fact that we need to stay alert and stay woke about everything that's going on, I feel like that's what keeps me running, you know, it keeps me up. I don't even, like, think of it as me being a young person anymore, you know, like, my whole life has changed to where, like, I'm starting to have to take the same precautions as my father does, you know, having such a huge age difference. But the cops don't care. The people that are shooting you don't care who you are. They don't care where you're from. They don't care how many kids you have. They don't care what degrees you have. My dad, he has a ton of degrees, but, you know, he still gets stopped in the street. He still gets frisked. You know what I mean? Those things that you have, your accolades, they don't mean anything when you're sitting on the side of a road, you know, dead, bleeding out. So what keeps me going is just the thought that it could happen to anybody. You know, it's like Murphy's Law. That's what keeps me going.
I'm sitting across from you, I look at you, man, and I see, like, the future, you know what I mean?
Thank you.
To see a young man like you, you know what I mean? I'm not even that much older than you, but I appreciate you, man.
Thank you, man.
Let's get into these bars, man. Let's get into these poems. What do you got for us today?
I did this poem called Listen. I do it a lot. It's actually a cool story because, like, my best friend Fernando Barrios, he did interpretive dance. Shout-outs to Frey Wall. He's an awesome cinematographer, and he shot it for us. So I'm going to go ahead and do it now. It's kind of like my trademark thing. It's a poem I wrote called Listen. Because you just want someone to listen. You've heard everything from everything. It's rendering your minds, but at certain times, the lies can overpower the truth. The youth seem to feel the same way. Leaping strength of gratitude, expensive feelings. Hence the feeling gratitude, a word of meaning. Because where I'm from, we use the word as a word of healing. How come you don't act ghetto, Xavier? Because I have gratitude. I speak with gratitude. I live with gratitude. Gratitude don't hate. She knows what she's getting herself into. She ain't so ignorant, but you see, she is belligerent if you do not treat her right. How you know all these big words, Xavier? Because I wanted someone to listen. So I listen. I listen to everything. I listen to teachers giving frustrating footnotes on how I should stay in my faction, yet using figurative language, hoping that I didn't find out what they were trying to tell me. I listen to everything. I listen to public presentations of prince, pimps, and pretend punk pricks puffing puppies in the back of a parking lot. I listen to everything. I listen to baby cries, baby laughs, steaming baby back ribs, baby got back, and baby face at least 5 times. I listen to everything. Now I just want you to listen. Listen to the arts here. Listen to the culture. Listen to the history. It's all a part of the mystery. Just listen to me. Listen to him. Listen to him. Listen to her. Listen to him. Listen to me like a deer crushing a dead leaf in the dark forest in the night sky because you thought it was okay to go night hunting with your black friends. Listen to me like you're turning up a radio station to clear the awkward silence in the car. Listen to me like I'm about to tell a secret about the elephant in the room. Just listen. I just want to be heard. I just want to speak my words. And if I curse, then take me to church. If I curse, then give me detention. I won't mention your intentions to purposely not pay me the pension to speak my words. You eat my words. So I'll be at detention. And I'll pass my mixtape to the dude sitting next to me. Because he'll listen. Matter of fact, you won't listen. You'll just turn me down. Yeah, I said, you'll just turn me down. In which case, I guess I would have learned my lesson. So I'll just listen. Thank you.
Man, you give me, you inspire me with so much hope, man. And you give me hope for the future. Awesome. So thank you so much for being with us here today. Is there anywhere, if people wanted to find more of your work, that they could go?
Yeah, there's a Facebook page. Xavier, look up Xavier Z-Man Thompson. Look that up. Follow me on Instagram. I go by the name of Trapolosity. So look that up. And thank you guys for having me. Shouts out to my family, everybody out there, Ms. Catherine McGill, Rainbow Studios Theater, Albuquerque Youth Symphony, Frey Wall, Colin Dials, Fernando Barrios, all my fan bam at Highland High School. Shouts out to Highland Band, Hi Miss G, fan bam all around Albuquerque. We going up. Woke EP coming soon. And expect great things. So,
oh yeah, man.
Yeah,
hey, appreciate you being here, man. I can't wait to see what you do in the future, man.
Most definitely. Thank you guys for having me.
Xavier, I want to thank you for coming in and speaking to us. To hear someone who is my age express his emotions with such power is amazing to me. To hear you share your knowledge and how you see the world as a young Black man is eye-opening. Again, we send our sincerest condolences to all of the families who have suffered losses this past month.
And again, I just really want to underscore that this violence is really state-sanctioned. It's structural. What happened in Dallas, what happened in Minneapolis, what happened in Baton Rouge. We live in a system that allows this kind of violence, that sometimes encourages this kind of violence, that pits us against each other. But right now, it's time for us to talk to one another, to listen to each other, to listen like Xavier tells us to listen.
If you're asking yourself, what else can I do? We have some suggestions.
Here's one option. Color of Change has started a petition in an attempt to bring accountability to a system that needs to be held to the same standards as everyone else. Its goal is to defund police departments that continuously devalue Black lives.
You can go to act.colorofchange.org to sign the petition and start making the changes needed to stop violent police acts on African Americans.
Another option is to seek out more knowledge and understanding. You can read Dr. Finney Coleman's books, for example, or you can even take his classes on campus.
During this time of tragedy in our country, it's important to take the time to take care of yourself and heal. Every Friday morning at 10:30 at Teague Park, you can join Generation Justice, Raices, and Swap as we gather to heal and pray in light and love.
Now, for our next song, here's Blessings by Chance the Rapper.
The blessings come down when the praises go up. The blessings come down.
We've come to the end of our show. We'd like to give thanks to Dr. Finney Coleman for joining us to discuss structural racism and the Black Lives Matter movement.
We'd also like to thank the amazingly talented spoken word poets Ebony Isis Booth and Xavier Thompson for sharing their powerful words with us today.
And thank you to the Black Student Alliance members Nicole Beatty, Jakia Fuller, and Anthony Williams for sharing your perspectives and experiences as young African Americans.
The show was produced by Joshua Horton, Patrick Goff, and Roberta Rael. Production assistance came from Polly Dinetclaw, Christina Rodriguez, Kateri Zuni, and Tamara Kolaki.
Stay connected with us. Check out our website, generationjustice.org, where you can listen to all our past radio programs, see music playlists, read our blogs, watch videos, and so much more. Our podcasts are available on iTunes, so be sure to subscribe.
We're also active on social media, so be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and Instagram.
Generation Justice is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, with additional funding from the McCune Foundation and, of course, all of you who have contributed to our project by visiting our website and clicking donate.
Thank you for joining us this week.
Our radio program was dedicated to all black lives taken by a system that remains unaccountable and to the police officers who lost their lives because of the same system of violence. I'm Kenya Alonzo.
And I'm George Luna Peña. Coming up on KUNM is Spoken Word, so stay tuned and join us next Sunday at 7 o'clock. Now here's some more music. I cannot sleep. I cannot rest. I cannot dream. I cannot stay silent. I feel the violence in my soul. I feel the violence in my soul. I'm tired of human lives turned into hashtags.